I'm Robin Amler of IBS Intelligence. You're listening to the IBS iViews podcast. With me is Dottie Schindlinger, Executive Director of Diligent Institute. And we're talking about ESG and things that are perhaps not quite as right as they should be with ESG. There are concerns. Let's start with this. There are concerns over greenwashing. This is a word that's been around for a while. Is it really a problem?
It's a good question, right? And when we talk about greenwashing, I think one of the things that really got a lot of attention in the last couple of years were funds, ESG-related funds, that were bundling in investment assets that were not really in line with ESG principles. And so I think that was one of the main issues that a lot of people were having related to ESG. You know, it is interesting. Diligent Institute does a report every year in concert with Spencer Stuart, where we survey about 1,000 company directors around the world on what their companies are doing in various ESG-related strategies and efforts. And what we found from them last year, and we're in the process of fielding the survey for this year right now, and the report will come out a little bit later in the spring. What we found from them last year was that while they may no longer be using the word ESG, they are still focused on meeting some of the commitments and goals that they've set for their companies over the last number of years. And in particular, I would say in areas related to climate and in areas related to their employees and customer bases. So really ensuring that they're making good on the goals that they've set for their companies over the last couple of years. That said, they're maybe doing it a little bit more quietly. There's been such a political backlash, particularly in the US over the last couple of years. They're continuing on with their work, but they're maybe not sending out quite as many press releases as they might have done in 2020 and 2021.
Well, there's a couple of things going on. One, you've alluded to the, how can I put this, tiredness with sustainable investing and sustainable corporate activity. But there is also still a push for ESG reporting and sustainability disclosure. Because what we're seeing now is we're seeing the legislation that was talked about a couple of years ago is now in place and is now being acted upon.
Well, that's certainly true in the EU and in the UK. Here in the US, we've only just in the last week received updated guidance from the SEC around climate disclosures. And what we saw in that final set of rules from the SEC, they've walked back a number of the more stringent provisions of that rule, including, you know, they sort of are no longer thinking about companies disclosing scope one and scope two unless they are deemed material to the company, which is a pretty significant change from the proposed rule, which had everyone reporting on scope one and scope two, regardless of materiality. They also completely dropped any requirement to disclose scope three emissions. And that's quite a big disappointment for a number of observers in the ESG space. I think there was a lot of hope around ensuring that scope three was included and being a little bit more in line with other laws happening around the world. And I'm thinking specifically of things like the CSRD and some of the other provisions that are being talked about in other jurisdictions. That said, also, the rules don't really go into effect until 2026, even for the largest companies. So we're in this in-between period. And this particular rule from the SEC received the most feedback of any proposed rule that they've ever put forth. It took two full years for them to have the conversation, sift through the feedback, and figure out what they were going to do with the final rules. And so, you know, most observers are expecting there's going to be challenges in the courts. I just don't really know where we're going to land within the next couple of years. Setting all that aside, you know, the thing about ESG and ESG legislation is we only have one planet Earth. And so, you know, what is happening in one jurisdiction really kind of needs to impact everyone. And that's certainly true of rules like the CSRD, where if you're a multinational, you have to pay attention to what's happening in other parts of the world. You can't just be focused on your own backyard. So I think it's a bit of a topsy-turvy time that we're in. There's a lot of various approaches happening legislatively around the world, and I just don't think we're fully settled yet. We're getting there. I think we're definitely moving in a direction of coalescence, but we're certainly not there yet.
One of the basic problems with ESG is that it is remarkably difficult actually to quantify some of the things that you need to quantify, some of the things that you need to measure. You produce all this data, but how can you turn it into dollars and cents to be meaningful for a corporate entity? Because ultimately, it has to be turned into dollars and cents. We need to make it worth companies while to actually commit to doing this sort of thing.
It's very true. I mean, I will say when you think about things like climate, you know, climate related activities and climate disclosures, it's a little bit more specific, right? There's some very clear measures around carbon emissions and kind of what you're producing, what you're consuming, the impact that your downstream work is having. Those things are much more easily measured than, let's say, some of the measures you might want to have around the S, the social aspect of ESG, or the G, the governance aspects of ESG. I will say it may be useful to understand the way most corporate leaders are now thinking about ESG internally. They're not really lumping it into a big bucket of ESG. It's really being broken down into its component parts from an oversight perspective, right? So you've got at the board level, quite often the nominations and governance committee, or maybe to some extent, the remuneration committee gets involved in thinking about S-related issues in ESG. Often you've got the audit committee or the risk committee taking a look at things related to the E of ESG. And then the nominations and governance committee, you know, quite squarely the G of ESG is on their shoulders. So you've got this, you know, dispersion of efforts around ESG. And quite frankly, I think that's a good thing because ESG was always kind of this big amorphous category. I think part of the reason it's received such pushback is because of its lack of specificity. You know, lumping environment, social, and governance into one big effort, it was always a bit uncomfortable. It was always a bit too broad for people to kind of get their arms and their heads around. And so I think the way companies are approaching it is a bit more pragmatic, you know, ensuring that they've got the right level of oversight and the right data in each one of those streams. And if you take that approach, then getting, for example, useful metrics around what's happening with your talent risk and your workforce, what's happening with local communities, that becomes a much more manageable process. If you break it down into its component parts, it's a bit easier. I will say, though, in terms of how organizations are managing all of this, there are definitely better tools. You know, Diligent makes some of them coming on the market that help people get real-time data, real-time analytics on what is happening, decisions that are being made at the leadership level, what's the outcome of those decisions. That is definitely a step in the right direction. We've needed tools like that for a while. Now they're beginning to be on the market. They're much more comprehensive. They really look from the top down to the frontline workers and beyond and give that kind of visibility back to the leadership so they can make good strategic decisions.
You brought up the subject of data, and I alluded earlier to the fact that there are people who have been churning out reams and reams of data, which has been effectively unquantifiable. But now there are steps forward where this can be quantified, where measurable outcomes can be compared. Now, whether you call it fintech or regtech or risk tech, there are firms producing solutions.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Diligent, quite frankly, is one of the largest. If you think about the governance risk compliance space, that's sort of broadly speaking the type of software that we provide. And, you know, what we're trying to do with our Diligent One platform approach is provide that line of sight, again, right from the frontline workers. So think internal audit, think the sustainability team, think the finance team, the legal team, those that are involved in working with the board, all the way up to the board. And so making sure that there's that clear single source of truth around what is happening and providing the kinds of data and metrics that leaders need in order to make good decisions. Right? They don't need to know, for example, you know, every single thing that is happening on a daily basis, but what they need to understand is how does that affect the risk overall? How does that affect the strategy? Are the decisions they're making having a good effect or a bad effect? They need to sort of have that level of visibility. They also need to be able, to the extent that they can, to see what's coming around the corner. And that is one of the hardest charges of a board of directors, is to be able to forecast kind of what might be coming next. And having access to this kind of good visibility can to some extent help them predict what might be coming next. And they may not be able to really do it with a great degree of accuracy, but they can begin to do some scenario planning. They can certainly do some scenario analysis. You know, if we take no action, what does this look like by the year 2030, by the year 2035, 2050? And they can then begin to make some adjustments to strategy based on those analyses.
I know the answer to that one. It's going to mean fines and reputational risk.
And probably a much warmer planet Earth.
I may be being unfair. In fact, I almost certainly am being unfair, but I'm going to say it anyway. Nobody in corporate America, corporate Britain, corporate Europe is that worked up about a warming planet Earth. They're more worked up about what profits they're going to make for next year. you need to be able to persuade people that this is good for your wallet as well as good for the planet.
Well, I think that final point I would agree with. I was going to say, I don't know that I would necessarily agree, because I kind of reject the notion that those two things are different, right? I mean, honestly, things that are good for the bottom line should be good for the planet and vice versa. And I think there's been a lot of evidence to support that the companies that are being the most innovative in how they approach their carbon emissions and their business models to ensure that they're doing things right by the planet have also had very strong financial performance. There's some really interesting test cases, and I'll give you an example. There's a company based in Switzerland that, you know, sort of had, they were a manufacturer of washing machines and sort of laundry items. And they sort of had this epiphany that, you know, they could construct units that the engine would last for 50 years, but they hadn't been doing that because they were a consumer facing brand and they wanted people to buy new washing machines every few years. But they decided to change their business model. And so now what they are doing is doing sort of a lease model. It's more of a sales as a service or software as a service type of model where they basically have a subscription. It's annual recurring revenue now. And they do construct these engines to last 50 years because they want them to keep in service so people will keep subscribing to them. The consumer is very happy because whenever they have a problem, they make a phone call and they get a new unit that same day, or they get repair that same day. It's now part of a subscription service. And the company's making a lot more money because rather than selling one unit and then dealing with collecting all the waste, those units are out in the field making the money every single day. So I think there's a lot of different ways that companies can begin to think differently about what it is that they're actually in the business of doing, what are their strengths, and how can they align profit making with, you know, really being beneficial to their people and their planet and also to the company. There's a lot of ways that that can happen.
Dottie Schindlinger, Executive Director of Diligent Institute, thank you very much.